Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 70 for September 25th, 2006. Bad Juju. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Dell. For this week's specials, check out Leo's picks at twit.tv/Dell. And by Visa. Safer, better money. Life and TWiT takes Visa. So it's time to TWiT, and we have a great TWiT panel today. Of course, Patrick Norton is here from DL.TV, the newly improved, good-looking DLTV. I like
that.
We
have a website that doesn't suck.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Did ZD do that for you?
Yes.
Very nice.
Props to Nevin and Dinah that put together the design and the whole crew, Michael and Robin, who were able to get us moved over to Movable Type Enterprise.
Oh, it's Movable Type.
Oh. Yes, and it's glorious after having spent a bunch of time trying to run blogs.
Were you guys using vignettes still, or what were you using?
No, we're using a variation of Intelligence Community Server.
Okay.
Which is like a 1.0 version of the software.
This is a really good-looking engine. I mean, it gives you, and I can tell it's flexible. Also here, that's Will Harris. You recognize the Brit, a.k.a. Nick. He's in San Francisco for the Intel Developers Forum starting on Wednesday.
And isn't it lovely here?
Yeah, actually, I know why you really came here. You're here to meet Lala on Tuesday. David Prager is going to get us in. David Prager from Revision 3. Big party for Revision 3 on Tuesday. What's the party about?
It is Revision 3. There's free drinks. Free drinks
for us.
The party's all about the fact that Revision 3 has been around for a while, and we're kind of turning the corner, and every time at the end of the show...
It's a relaunch, man.
What's going on with Revision 3? And I'm like, oh, we got all this stuff we're working on. I can't say anything.
Revision 3.1.
But it's kind of like it's a relaunch versus just a launch. So, there's a whole bunch of new stuff that we're going to announce on Tuesday. We'll go live the very, very next day.
Cool. So Wednesday there's going to be something brand new.
Yep. Oh, and boy.
I got to say something, though. You guys at Dig and Revision 3 are acting like it's 1998 all over again with the parties, the T-shirts. You guys must have VC.
The parties are pretty tame.
Oh, are they? I haven't been to any. I'm going to go to this one.
I'm pretty sure you could manage to bankroll any one of these. Not to take any. The parties have been great, but it's not like we're not talking like, product isn't shipping and they spent $75,000 to bring an 80s pop icon in and threw a party for 2,000 people.
It's really fun to do everything from like the whole, the whole grassroots mentality. So, there's this pretty cool club in Petrillo Hall called Mighty, and you get to know the folks there and you say, hey, we want to have a launch party, and you work out deals with them almost different than, if you were a huge player and you're like, hey, we want to have a party, and they're like, okay, we're going to charge you X $1,000. Like, all right, where do we sign? Well,
So is everybody invited to this, or have we just given out information that nobody should act
on? No, not at all. Probably almost a month ago, we went over to upcoming.org and we were all excited about the fact that we knew this is going to be our launch date, and so we went over there and talked about, hey, this is where the party's going to be, and whoever wants to come, and then we have a...
Is it booked up?
We booked the club for the night of the 26th.
But you must have more than a few thousand people who said yes.
On the upcoming.org, which anyone can see, if you go to Google and type upcoming.org and space Revision 3, you'll find the invite. It's not an invite, it's just the event. So we sent that out, and then we put that online, and then we typed in... We put together a list of as many people we knew that we thought of as friends of Revision 3, and then we copied a bunch of different press folks because we wanted to get some publicity, and we fired that off as official invites. And then we're expecting, I'd say at least 300 people, maybe more. I know the venue.
No, I'm just asking, can the TWiT Army come?
Absolutely.
Oh, you're in trouble now.
I know we are. But they're absolutely invite anyone's free to come 7 p.m. at Mighty, which is in San Francisco on 119 Utah Street.
And you'll be there, right, Patrick?
Yeah, actually, I'm just laughing because like if you go to San Francisco for upcoming.org, there's Friday was Yahoo Hack Day, Tuesday is the Revision 3 party, Tuesday 10-3 is the Delicious Birthday Bash, then there's the Web 2.0 conference, 11-7, Laughing Squid, 11-18 for its second decade.
It's all over again. We're doing it all over again. That's funny.
There's a big hole until Macworld Expo.
And, well, you'll be
glad. You got IDF going on next week and all that too.
That's right? I think a lot of people in town like Will for the Intel Developers Forum, and we'll have an update on that next week. And maybe Will, you'll join us. Although I'm going, I'm sure you're going, Patrick, right?
To which?
IDF.
Yes.
We gotta go to
that. When are you headed down to Ontario, Leo?
And then Podcast Expo is, I'm going down Thursday for Podcast Academy. My keynote is Friday for Podcast Expo. And then, I'm getting the award for a podcaster, a pod person of the year, I think.
You know, I was waiting for you to talk about what you were going there for so I could introduce that fact and congratulate you and make you seem all swank and humble. But
you mean if I hadn't tooted my own horn, you would have done it for me?
I've been waiting for a chance since
you got my
recording.
Back, baby. Thank you.
Is there a gift bag?
There is.
There is.
I'm probably give it away, but there's some nice stuff. Yeah, there's a.
Are they announced at the IRS like the over at the Emmys?
Not that kind of a gift bag. I don't have to worry about the Sopranos stealing my gift bag. No, it's. I think I'm getting a Marantz 670 recorder. Like I don't have enough of those, and a pair of Sony headphones, something like that. But
well,
I think
you know,
it's,
you should,
it's the
you should
it's
help
the,
a young blogger with it.
I'll help a young blonde. I mean blogger. Yes, I will. Yes. No, I think it's a. I mean, I'm very honored. I think it's great. Doug Kay won the award last year, the first award, and this is you know, I feel bad. I might give the money to Adam Curry. I think you know. But anyway, yeah, that's nice. It's nice acknowledgement. It'll be a lot of fun. We didn't win any awards as you know for our podcasts. So.
I thought the podcasts weren't eligible for the awards next year.
We were not eligible for the Podcast of the Year award. We were not. But we were eligible in the categories, and I think Security Now was nominated in technology but did not win. So
very hurt.
Big story. Some interesting stories. As long as we're talking podcasting, did you see that? And actually, I'm interested what your reaction is on this, Patrick, because of Extreme iPod. Apple has gone after Podcast Ready, which is a company that does a podcast client called MyPodder. Now, I can understand why Apple would say you can't use MyPodder. It sounds too much like iPod. But apparently, they're also saying you can't use the word podcast ready. Is Apple trying to trademark the word podcast?
No, they're trying to control all use of the word pod within the context of audio and the net.
Well, doesn't that mean podcast?
Well, that was my next logical extension.
I'm scared. Seriously, now I know with some of the sites like Odd Lounge, they went after them a while ago, and they had to change it to iLounge. Did you have to change Extreme iPod?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anybody with iPod in the name is going to have legal action taken against them by Apple.
ZDNet had a very interesting on the ZDNet blogs, Russell Shaw's blog. Post today, in which he actually looked at Apple's trademark filings and so forth, and came to the conclusion that this was happening because Apple was trying to trademark new uses of the word iPod, including a trademark for iPodcast, and was getting some pushback from the Patent and Trademark Office, saying, you know, you guys haven't established to our satisfaction your ownership of this, so.
I don't think Apple's going to be able to own the word podcast.
It's in the dictionary.
Doesn't mean they're not going to try. I mean, let me actually. Is that the scratch that they're not? It's not. They're not going to try. What they're going to try to do is not own any other following use of a word or phrase created, you know, around the word iPod or iTunes.
I've said for a long time that it's really the choice of the name podcast was unfortunate because it does imply an iPod. But more than that, what's really unfortunate ever since iTunes came out is Apple really, it looks like podcasts are an Apple phenomenon. Without iTunes, there would be no podcasts. You know, a reporter called me from Wired News and asked me on the anniversary of iTunes, wasn't it great that iTunes saved podcasting? And I said, no. It's terrible. It looks like Apple, like podcasting belongs to Apple. And this just further. Do we need a new name?
Netcast, man.
I like Netcast. but I'm the only one, apparently. A lot of people said, ew.
The funny thing was Creative Labs tried to make out like podcast meant a personal on-demand cast.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, whatever.
Nobody's buying that one. Some people have suggested Oddcast, A-U-D, like audio, Oddcast and Vidcast. There have been a lot of suggestions, none of them so salubrious. I think Netcast is simple and straightforward, but apparently maybe too
podcast
generic.
Podcast has too much traction.
Well, that's right. It's too late, isn't it?
Yeah, so my thought was like it'd be like, you know, changing. It's not hacker, it's cracker. Hacker's a
right.
good phrase, but
yeah, that never worked. On the other hand, it's a new medium. It's only a couple of years old. A lot of people don't know about it, and I still run into people all the time who say, "Oh, I would listen to your shows, but I don't have an iPod."
Yeah, well, it's kind of difficult because, I mean, even for us when we're trying to, like, have Revision 3 and people are like, what is Revision 3? And we're trying to come up with a formal statement of what it is, and we want to say, well, we create original shows. They're not TV shows. We don't want to say podcasts. And for Twit, you don't want to say that they're podcasts either. So what do you call them? It's just difficult to decide what to call it.
Downloadable videos, downloadable
internet
audio.
Distributed video programs.
Yeah, but you see, that's like, you know,
IDVP.
Hey guys, did you hear about that new internet distributed audio program?
You need a catchy name and podcast. Let's face it, one of the reasons podcasting is successful is it had a good name, and it rode on the coattails of iPods.
And you can ask your grandmother about podcasting, and chances are she might not know what it is, but she's heard of it.
Right. We're stuck. So what happens now? I would be shocked if Apple went against around suing or sending cease and desist letters to podcasters at this point.
Wouldn't be surprised?
I would be surprised. I'd be very surprised. That'd be crazy.
Well, because Apple still wants to call it podcast, though, don't they? But they just want to own the name podcast.
Well, that would be.
I don't think they're even trying to own the name podcast.
I hope not.
But they've rigorously defended any use of iPod. Anywhere. So, you know, who knows? You know, maybe they think they have a claim podcast ready, or they're going to try to do that. Maybe it's a flanking maneuver to keep Microsoft from, you know, suddenly paying attention to
Microsoft
podcasts.
For a while called them blogcasts, which was even worse than podcasts.
That's awful.
They're still refusing to build, you know, they still haven't built RSS, you know, and the ability to download podcasts.
I'm praying, frankly, that the Vista has the ability built in to download podcasts. That would finally break the monopoly that iTunes has.
Well, IE7, it seems like they're refusing to put RSS anywhere other than IE7. Because I got to talk at CES this year. I got to talk to one of the product manager or the product manager for Windows Media 11. And I was like, hey, who do I need to buy a, you know, case of scotch or a lifetime supply of pizzas to get RSS support integrated into Windows Media Player 11? And it was the kind of answer I got was, we'd like to have that. It's not our number one priority, but we'd like to add that in, if you know.
How hard can it be?
In IE7. What's that?
How hard can it really be?
Well, having never, you know, managed a project of that size within a company that is uptight about, you know, I always get this vision of Microsoft being in a sort of a terminal battle between trying to own specs or create quote open unquote specs that it, you know, has the ability to lean on, and making it something as open as, you know, it was a big deal for them to put it, you know, RSS readers into IE7. So
I don't think it's so maybe much that it's hard. I think they're gun shy. I mean, after doing Active Desktop, I think they're maybe really reluctant to push technology into the OS. It makes sense to put it, frankly, in IE7. I mean, that's the OS.
Right.
I mean, what would it... the only other way they might do it, and I would hope they might consider this, is putting it into Windows Media Player. Although, have you been following...
No, just been talking about it. We've been talking to them about doing that.
Right.
Like, well, we'd like to, but...
Have you been following the discussion over the copy protection in Windows Media Player 11?
It sounds crazy. I can't believe that it's true.
What, fill us in, because I'm not completely clear on what they're trying to do. This is the new beta.
Right. So apparently, I mean, I haven't tried this for myself, but it's if you download DRM'd music currently, right, on Windows Media Player, you can back up all the licenses for that music to a file, and then you can also back up the actual music files, and then if your computer dies, you can have a backup, you can transfer it onto your new computer, you've got all your licenses there, all your music there, everything works fine again. What apparently happens in Vista is that you can't back up the licenses. So you can back up all the music,
but you
that's
can't
no
play
good.
It, because
you don't have the licenses. And they're saying that this is by design, that you can't back up the licenses.
Why not?
Would seem, well, because then you could transfer the licenses to another computer simultaneously. and you could have the music and the licenses on two computers at once, which would clearly be illegal.
You know, the Inquirer calls DRM an infection, and they say that you can't...
Isn't that brilliant?
I think it's true! You cannot back up your licenses, which means if your hard drive crashes, even if you've backed up your music, you got to buy new music?
Yeah.
Now, here's the amazing thing. If you rip your own CDs with Windows Media Player, you got to make sure you... And this is true, actually, of current versions. You've got to turn off that copy protect music. Otherwise, it will copy protect your own burning, and you'll have the same problem.
Yeah, that is true with current CD burns. You have to turn it off and say, actually, with my own music that I've bought...
CD rips. I mean, it's natively set to use WMA.
It puts it on. And, of course, the Zune adds copy protection when you transfer files from the Zune. So if people... Right. If I'm sitting here with a Zune, and you've got a Zune, you said, have you heard the latest twit? Let me send it to you, mate. Because that's how you guys talk. I'll get a copy with DRM in it. I could play it three times, and then it stops playing until I, quote, license it. Which, by the way, is a violation of our license, our Creative Commons license. You're not allowed to DRM the file.
Wow, that's really interesting. I didn't realize that the Zune added its own.
Yeah, it adds it to
Well, they say that's breaking licensing.
It's breaking the license. They say we have to do it because we can't tell when you're transferring a file what's copy protected and what's not. Of course, they can, but they say they can't. So we got to just do it to everything.
I don't know. Wow. Like, I'm reading the Microsoft page on backing up and restoring licenses, and it's kind of fascinating.
And that's why I agree with the Inquirer when they say DRM is an infection. It spreads. Just like the GPL, you know, that people complain about the viral, and of course, without it, we wouldn't have open source, but the viral elements of GPL, where if you use a GNU public licensed piece of open source software to create your own software, that automatically inherits the license and so has to be free as well. This is the opposite. It's, you know, it automatically inherits the DRM and has to be copy protected as well.
I'm kind of curious, has Microsoft responded anywhere to say why they are not allowing licenses to be backed up?
Not as far as I know.
In Windows
Only Windows that it's 11. Intentional. Only that.
Well, they just said they're not.
Well, no, but correct me if I'm wrong, Will, but didn't you just say they said that this was intentional behavior?
I believe that if you read through the page that's linked in that article...
That's what I'm backing up.
Yeah, I believe if you
licenses.
Read it through, it says it's by design.
By design.
Well, all it says is Windows Media Player 11 does not permit you to back up your media usage rights, previously known as licenses. However, depending on where your protected files came from, you might be able to restore your rights over the internet. That's a pretty big moat to throw out there.
Exactly. Of course, you don't have that problem, do you, on iTunes, because your licenses are stored... With your user account.
Yeah, but you better not lose your... It's actually the same, because you better not lose the files, because you can't download them again. Of course...
But you can at least back up the files and move them to another computer.
Yeah.
Right.
Although, you know, it's funny, because for a while you could deauthorize, and it's easy to accidentally... You know, reformat. Exactly. And forget to. I do it all the time. And those of us who use a lot of computers, you know, you're allowed five computers, which I think is, you know, fairly kind. But if you forget to deauthorize, you can only deauthorize all systems once a year now. So I'm waiting till December 5th because I can't run my iTunes music on my new computer until I can deauthorize the old formatted one.
You know for a fact there's quite a number of users, iTunes users, who've actually just accidentally erased all of their music, and
yes.
Apple has actually allowed them to re-download everything because they keep records of that.
What do you
do?
Do you beg? Because if you just ask, you know, normally they'll say, no, sorry. How do you get them to I know I've heard these stories, anecdotal stories as well, but what do you do?
The most recent one that I read about was on Will Wheaton's blog. Will Wheaton,
Trek, you can do it.
Well, that's what a lot of the people, because he posted this on his blog and it got submitted to Dig, and I was like, oh, that's really cool. Apple's so nice. And then, of course, a bunch of the commenters on, well, you know,
you have
you're
to
a
do
big
is,
actor, you do this and this
yeah.
and this. And
all you have to do is be Will Wheaton.
So there was arguments, and like, so Apple's saying, no, this is our policy. If someone does this, we can give them their stuff back. I don't know. You have to go to his blog and read it.
It is not their policy. I know that it's not their policy. They're very specific.
What I thought was quite interesting was I tried this the other day, is that you can actually play... it is actually... I didn't realize it was computer. I thought it was user account, because I have two iTunes accounts, and even when I'm signed in with one, it will let me play music from the other.
Yeah. It stores more than one license.
Yeah.
Look, it's clear DRM sucks. It only inhibits honest users, because if I were a dishonest user, I'd merely run the program that removes all copy protection, and I wouldn't have this problem.
There's some more stuff in there than the DRM, Leo. Reading through this, the Inquirer article, and reading through that page, you know, it gets. I'll just quote the Inquirer, because they're obviously doing a hell of a job covering this. After 3 days, it basically guts your TiVo capabilities. After 3 days, it kills your recordings for you. Going away for a week, tough, your rights are inconvenient to the proffer, so they have to go. Recorded TV shows that are protected with media usage rights, such as some TV content recorded on premium channels, will not play back after 3 days.
Is this Windows Media Center or Zune?
Windows Media Player 11 Beta 2 for XP is installed on
If you use Windows Media Player to play back TV shows or record TV shows.
If you have Windows Media Player 11 Beta 2 running on your Media Center Edition PC currently, it'll erase your, you know, it can possibly erase your files after 3 days. If there's basically media usage rights set with the show.
That's fairly horrid.
So that's like it's also kind of strange. Like, it's like, hey, you know all that cool stuff we built into the Media Center Edition to complete with TiVo? We're gonna kill it now, in a really strange way. That's just sad.
Well, I tell you,
and everyone started quietly weeping.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's frustrating, and frankly, it's. We should get Cory Doctorow on. He could do a little eulogy, but it's just frustrating. I think consumers have to stand up and say, look, we're not going to accept this, and we can't let Congress go ahead and promote this. Did you see the latest? I can't quote the Valley Wag headline because it.
Oh,
has...
that's what Nick Douglas likes to write because it gets good. Because good headlines get good attention.
Congress says "F you" to net neutrality with blatant pro big business push poll. This is actually kind of interesting. You know what a push poll is? It's basically a fake survey that members of Congress use, politicians use, to promote their ideas. They ask very loaded questions, and then they come back with a result. Look, 87% of people said net neutrality is a terrible idea. So clearly, I mean, they're campaigning hard. It said, according to the results of this poll from the Senate Committee on Commerce, the Ted Stevens Committee, only 5% of voters had ever even heard of net neutrality. When they asked voters whether they wanted a law, quote, delivering TV and video choice or a law enhancing net neutrality, guess what people chose? TV and video choice. So naturally, when the results of the poll come back saying 90% of people hate net neutrality, but just shows you the when you get Congress actually campaigning in favor of AT&T and Comcast and Verizon, that's a scary thing.
I don't know. You could also look at the fact that, you know, even within groups like the EFF, which are normally always appear to be, you know, utterly and totally together on what their viewpoint on a particular issue is, you know, some of their management's pretty heavily divided over whether or not net neutrality.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean,
government level.
Do we want the FCC to be sniffing into our business? And I mean, I understand, and until there's a real issue coming up, but I see the light on the railroad track heading straight for us. When you see things like this, it's very clear that these companies are, you know, adamant about forwarding their point of view on this. And I don't know.
We're just trying to protect our relationship to the good consumers that built this company and trust us to deliver the best end-user experience possible, Mr. LaVore. Trying to suggest that there's some insidious opportunity we might take advantage to not prioritize the packets that are running over our network through the courtesy of peering?
Are you against choice, Mr. LaPorte?
Do you not understand how the internet works, Mr. LaPorte?
I don't know. It's a bunch of tools.
To prioritize.
I don't know. It's a tools. It's tools. Hey, before we go on, I want to talk in a little bit about the big HP scandal, because there's even more news. This is becoming the People Magazine story of Twit. But before we do that, I just want to mention, of course, this is the last Twit to a feat. Well, maybe, no, I guess we'll have one more featuring our friends at Visa. They've been very supportive of the Twit podcasts on as a whole. We just want to remind people that when you use your credit card, use your Visa card. Help support them in the way they've helped support us. Visa is working hard to protect you online. Whenever you buy something online with Visa, you know that you are protected by their fraud monitoring And of course, they're,
are they the ones that do the pockets of protection with all the football players surrounding what's his name on the Patriots, Tom Brady?
I don't know. Are they? I don't watch NFL, so you have to tell me.
Of protection. That's
pockets of protection.
At.
I like it.
And they have all the linemen protecting the quarterback.
When you use Visa, you have a front line. That should be their slogan. Actually, it's,
well, there you have it.
It's actually just safer, better money. Life and Twit takes Visa.
But they've got the different linemen joking about being metaphors for different types of protection that the quarterback gets.
Visa for cleaner, safer tubes.
Sorry. I also want to thank Dell for their support. Remember, we've got some great Dell specials online. twit.tv/Dell. For the Leo's picks and some really good ones, some good prices. Again, I can't give them out on the podcast, but if you want to see what they are, twit.tv/Dell. And if you want to help us out when you buy your next Dell, just go through that website. Just, click through there. That gives us a little extra leverage with Dell. twit.tv/Dell. And that concludes this portion. So HP, let's talk about this one. This is... developing. Now Patricia Dunn is out. We predicted it here. She's forced out by the board. She's the former chairwoman of the board on Hewlett-Packard. Mark Hurd, the CEO, is even having to step forward saying, well, I admit I had something to do with it. And finally, for the first time, HP's stock is taking a little bit of a hit. Do you think the market is being skittish? Is HP still a strong company, or does this really hurt them?
I think what's really interesting is that the market has taken a hit, not because of the scandal, but because of the way that the scandal has been handled.
Yes. Yes, that's a good point. And then that was what Watergate was. The problem was not so much the act, but the cover-up. Often how badly these companies handle these crises really is bad.
I mean, I think the first rule of PR is that when something like this happens, you just... you fess up and you put all the details out there, because that way you're headline news for a day, but the next day you move on. But the way HP is playing it, where there's a little bit new coming out every day, they are headlines every day for the last 2 weeks or whatever, and it just works out so much worse in the long run, and they're really paying the price for it.
I think this is about having pissed off a lot of pivotal
journalists.
News organizations and journalists.
CNET's got now a whole landing page with all their stories. I mean, they're milking this sucker because
they'll build a landing page at the drop of a hat.
That's true.
They've got a great interface for that, and they move fast on it, lots of editors.
So, and there are a lot of stories. I mean, about more than a dozen stories on that page. Have you seen? I'm a little disappointed by CNET and others' coverage of this VML exploit in Windows, which is, I think, one of the more serious exploits in Windows. And the story broke on Wednesday. I haven't seen any coverage at all. Have you guys seen anything about this?
I hadn't even heard about it.
Yeah, no. And this is what bugs
is
me. Well, let me fill you in. We did a whole. We actually had finished Security Now, and this story broke. And we actually took the one we'd done and we'll put it off for next week and did a whole new Security Now around it. We talked to Eric Stiles. He's with Sunbelt Software, which distributes the Carrio personal firewall. They're a good company, good security company. They discovered this in the wild. It's an exploit in the wild. It was not discovered, theoretically. It was they found what they do is they constantly surf the net to kind of bad websites. And in this case, porn sites, adult sites, but more commonly cracks and wares sites. And when they get to these sites, they have a variety of ways of sniffing out exploits on the sites. And all of a sudden, they found these sites, quite a few of them, with an exploit that takes advantage of a hole in Windows XP, no matter how patched, even if your patches are fully updated. If you're using Internet Explorer 6 for sure, it's not clear, maybe 7 as well. It's possible to make a malformed VML file. Now, VML is a vector graphic format that is only displayed by Internet Explorer. Firefox ignores it. It's rarely used on the net. Turns out, though, the library that it uses to display this has a horrible bug in it that allows any page with this malformed VML image on it, or, by the way, HTML email can do it too, to embed any program they want, adware, spyware, Trojan horses, keyloggers, anything on your system.
This is WMF again.
It's just like WMF.
Is this the exploit that has something to do with like vector images?
It's vector images. And the thing is, I haven't seen any coverage of this. Microsoft has no patch for it. There is a simple fix if people know about it. You unregister the DLL for this. It's a command line. It's complicated. We have I'll have a link to it on the show notes. You just go to grc.com. But I think I have to say I'm a little disappointed at how little it's been covered in the tech. Is it that we are just now shell-shocked? We know a horrendous Windows hole no longer is news.
That's quite possibly it. Otherwise, you'd just be writing it every day.
Well, this is anything that can blow by a fully patched XP system is pretty bad juju. And I'm also looking at, like, I think 130 articles talking about this.
It's starting to come out now, which is good. But, I mean, it's just if it's coming out, it's just now coming out. We made a big deal about it because I really think people have the right to know about this. Microsoft is not offering a patch. I suppose they may next month, but
I just did a search and I found that Ars Technica published something about a company called Zero Day Emergency Response Team that are announcing that they've put out a patch for this.
Yeah, there is a patch, and I'm not recommending the patch only because it's so easy to do it yourself. And the problem with patches, you really have to test them. Before you use somebody third party's patch, who are these guys? I'm not saying it's a bad patch, but
especially as the company name Zero Day is a little like,
they're zombies.
What's interesting about this though is that these exploits are actually sold. This is a commercial package sold out of a Russian company, $20. Webmasters subscribe to this package. And it gets updated with new exploits. It's trivial for webmasters to put these exploits on their pages. And the reason they do it is they get paid per clicks from these adware companies, right?
So what is it? So it's installing adware on your system? Is that essentially what
yes,
it does?
Yes, although it could do anything. It could install any program, including a keystroke logger, spam forwarders, anything. Viruses, it could put something on there to erase your hard drive. There's no limit to what it could do. But most of the time, the reason this spreads so quickly is these webmasters make money. They put adware on people's systems. People click the adware, and the webmasters make money on it. The exploit is in other words, completely automatic, easy to implement. They found Sunbelt Software found it on one site. In the morning, there was one piece of adware on it. When they came back in the afternoon, there were 50 different pieces of adware would be installed if you went to that site.
Right.
And this is with a fully patched version of Windows using IE6. I guess you could use Firefox, you'd be safe, but you'd also have to turn off the preview pane in Outlook or make it a text-only preview pane or anything that's using IE to render HTML. I mean, it's a pretty big hole.
I think my question, I'd be kind of curious to find out what the sites are that are like the number one source of these.
Yeah, we asked them, and it was they're reluctant to give out the addresses. I think because they know people just surf to them.
www.hackerware.com.
Yeah, exactly.
That's going to be a great job, though, hasn't it? Just spending all day going around adult sites looking for stuff.
Well, it's automated. I'm sorry to say, Will. You don't apply for the job right now. They use VMware and a lot of specialized. You know what it is? I do see it now on news.com. It's coming up a little bit. On the news stories, it's not
this
the top
is, this
story.
This is always how nasty virus. Unless it's been one of those things where it's been a palpable impact on internet performance, it always takes a while for stuff like this to build up momentum. You're just on the bleeding edge.
I guess so. If you listen to Twitter or Security Now, you'll know.
I know we're doing an RA block on Tuesday. We're going to show people how to patch.
Would you?
Nasty hole.
Please do. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll do a video on how to do it too.
So dl.tv on Tuesday. It's a one line start run command, but it's certainly I think important to get the word out. Absolutely. So Toshiba batteries now blow up. I'm sorry, John's not on today because he was crowing last week about how my Toshiba hasn't blown up. No recall with Toshiba.
Toshiba hasn't blown up. Toshiba's having battery reliability issues with two of their models.
Oh, okay. So they are doing a battery recall, but it's not exploding batteries.
However, there has been a Lenovo that lit itself on fire in the last week.
I saw that, yeah. Yeah.
And I see even apparently three airlines, I don't have the names of them, it says have temporarily imposed bans on using the notebook models from Dell and Apple with
these batteries. We talked about this last week. It's Qantas, Korean Air, and Virgin. And I got a lot of email from people who've flown on Qantas because we have a lot of Australian listeners, and said, no, I brought my Dell or I brought my Apple. But what they're saying is you can't plug in if you've got a battery in there. You can't use your computer if you've got a battery in there. So what you have to do is take the battery out. And if you want to use a computer, you have to plug in. Of course, not all seats have plugs.
Right.
You have to wrap your battery.
Virgin's changed it now, so it's only if you have a battery that's affected by a recall.
Oh, so you can look at the serial number. What are they checking, serial numbers? What are they doing?
Who knows? That's what they're saying now.
Yeah, well, the TSA, the whole stripping your toothpaste and all liquids out of your bag.
Right.
I'm still kind of no Diet Cokes on.
What, Mr. Pricker?
Did you hear about Richard Branson from Virgin and what he donated $3 billion to?
Yeah, good for him. What?
I think that's awesome.
What did he donate it to?
Global warming.
Not global warming. Fixing global warming. I'd like to give billions to global warming.
To further the global warming.
Actually, that's really interesting. I saw that Al Gore film this week.
Ah, that's
the
obviously
Inconvenient
Branson
Truth.
Did too. Yeah. What do you think?
And it's fantastic.
Did you
really,
empty
really,
your bank
really
account
good.
And donate it to global
no,
warming?
No, it did convince me to buy a slightly better car, though. What was really interesting was that he pointed out that apparently in California there's been some push to like get cars to have better emissions regulations.
Yes, we just passed a law, in fact, in California.
Okay, and apparently the car companies were complaining, but apparently those are still less than are compulsory in China. And he made the point, like, it's ridiculous that like American companies can't comply with regulations that are currently in place in China.
Well, but part of the issue is that U.S. companies actually are completely complying with all of the current California air resource laws, and they're being sued for still being a major contributor to greenhouse gases.
That's interesting.
That's at least one of the more interesting analyses of the.
You just
try to
can't
stay
win.
Away from politics. Well, you know, you know.
You know, my dad is a earth scientist. He's a retired earth scientist. And when we were in the cruise in Alaska, of course, we're looking at the glaciers. And everybody's seen the Al Gore movie. And they're all going, oh, the glaciers are melting. They're melting. Now, my dad, this is his specialty. And he said, well, you know, they melt every 40,000 years. This is kind of not wouldn't be the first time. In fact, you know, there's very cyclic ice ages and meltings and ice ages and meltings. And, you know, he said, We undoubtedly are accelerating it, but it would happen anyway. And the best thing to do, he said, just people should rezone. Don't build on the waterfront right now because it's going to raise. It's going to go up. Just a word of warning from my dad.
Well, I don't think we really want a new ice age, though, do we? I don't know about you, but I'm
well,
really
we're going. I'll tell you what, we're going to have a new ice age. It's every 40,000 years.
So I'm not real stoked about the whole rising water. How fast is that water going?
It's good for surfing.
It's not actually. It's going to change all the brakes.
You got time. You got time.
I mean, but one of the things Will brings up, though, is a pretty good point. Is if you have, you know, it's good. I think fighting against, you know, air pollution is an outstanding thing to do.
I agree.
And you know, I think catalytic converters are a miracle. With the amount of crud they basically keep from entering into the atmosphere. And on the flip side, you have large numbers of companies who may in some cases be, you know, signatories to the Kyoto treaties who dump unbelievable amounts of crap directly into the atmosphere.
True. Although, you know, it's funny. Look, and I'm not one of those guys who says, oh, global warming's false science. And obviously, we've got to pay attention to this. But it's not all bad news. For instance, you know, one of the bigger issues, which is the hole in the ozone layer, because that, frankly, is not a natural phenomenon. It's caused by chlorofluorocarbons. Is actually shrinking.
Yeah, I mean, that's really good, which is a direct result of the sort of the regulation that was put through to ban CFCs. And that is pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what I'm going to say. I just...
All right, okay. How about this?
I guess I'll just say go watch the film.
Is Quid Pro Recycling?
Yes, we're for recycling.
For reuse whenever possible?
Yes, we are.
We are for intelligent consumption?
Yes, we are.
Okay, that's a very, I just love that phrase. It's fun to toss out.
But keep buying those computers, kids, okay? Every 2 years, whether you need one or not.
Well, how about at least buying green computers and making sure they're properly recycled or reused at the end of the
day? If you've listened to the jokes on this show enough, you'd know we're in favor of reuse.
Yeah. Or in my case, just using the machines until hell freezes over.
Dvorak.org/blog. There we go, right there. There is one right there. John is not here, and the reason he's not here is because his son, JC, is celebrating his 21st birthday today. So we say a happy birthday to JC. we're going to have a stand-in curmudgeon. Jerry Purnell wanted to be on, but I guess he couldn't get the tubes working because I don't see him online. So, who wants to be the curmudgeon of the week?
Anybody? Oh, please.
Will volunteers. We should just...
get off my lawn.
You do a very good American.
I suppose
that's all he has. That's all I have to say. You do a very good
I'll
American.
Take that as a compliment, I think.
Disney's Iger says that the new Apple unit has a small hard drive. I don't know. That sounds like an insult.
You talking about ITV?
Yeah. Well, I didn't think it had a hard drive, but Robert Iger, who ought to know because he's the CEO of Disney, says that, in fact, there is a small hard drive.
Well, this is really interesting because there seem to be two really different schools of thought about what the ITV actually is.
Jobs left it up in the air, I guess.
Because there was another thing which was could you see Intel processors, sort of core processors or whatever, in the new ITV?
And I thought it was going to be Vive.
Well, my understanding is that it's just literally a box which streams, and so all the processing is done on your iMac or whatever. It goes straight across and then goes into your TV. It's like an Airport Express, but for video.
Yeah. That's exactly what little information they've released sounds like.
It sounds like a Slim Devices or Slim B3 kind of thing.
But the thing from Iger and a couple of other reports that have turned up on CNET and things seem to say that it's more like a Mac Mini, like a Vive home theater PC that can store its own content and physically decode stuff off its own hard drive.
And there's no truth to the rumor that we'll back up your Windows Media Player 11 licenses. don't count on that. The Zune's going to be cheap. Did you see the price for the Zune? Walmart accidentally posted it, and then it went back down. And then
I saw that.
Walmart said $284, but I think it's even lower than that, actually. I've seen people say, no, it's only $225.
$230.
Yeah, $230.
I wouldn't be
It was quite interesting to see that Jay Allard, who's the guy that's in charge of the Zune project, he was saying that we made sure that it plays MPEG-4 because that's a really popular way that people like to rip their DVDs to.
He said that?
He said it, and everyone just went mental.
Their home DVDs that they made themselves. That's
right.
Yeah, that's a ticket. Well, it should support DivX then, because that really is the format people use, isn't it? What do you rip your?
We wouldn't know, Leo.
What do you rip your home DVDs to?
Well, I can rip whatever DVDs I like. I live in England.
Oh, yeah. Are you allowed to? You don't have a DMCA over there?
No, it's sweet freedom.
You better not travel to the U.S. though. We'll bust your ass.
Yeah, he's merely violating whatever copyright law might be in place. He's not, in addition, violating federal federal statutes
on reverse engineering copy protection. Oh, I'm glad to hear that. So go ahead.
It's actually okay under the DMCA to reverse engineer. You just can't tell anybody what you did.
Right. You got to keep it a secret. Can't publish.
No, I was saying that ITV is probably going to be a really, really, really big deal. I mean, they've already got, Apple's already fighting all these certain terms that surround podcasting. And that's even independent. I mean, they've got
maybe that's going to be the iPodcast.
Well, they've got their movies out there. They just put out, iTunes 7. It's got high resolution stuff. And obviously, everything that they're going to make it so everything
really
that you purchase, everything you purchase through the iTunes store, it's not my music store anymore, it's the iTunes store. Yeah. You're going to pop it onto your HDTV or pop it on your TV using the ITV, probably.
In the same speech.
Yeah, but they've only got one of the movie studios on board. And it's one that effectively Job owns a significant share.
In the same speech, though, Iger pointed out that they've sold $1 million worth of movies, 125,000 movies. In one week.
I wonder how much audio they sold in the same space.
Well, it's not comparable. I bought some of the new. I wanted to see how the 640x480 looked, so I bought some new TV shows, and I bought a movie, The Life of Zisu, whatever that Bill Murray was. Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. And the movie does not look as good because it is widescreen, so you don't get a full 480 lines.
So but they're overcharging for the movie.
They are, which it was $15, which is ridiculous. I could have bought the DVD for that.
How long did it take to download?
Well, I think their servers are jammed because it wouldn't download for like half a day, and then all of a sudden it comes in.
Yeah, but the other services have never had that. They usually can start streaming the movie. The Windows based stuff.
iTunes will stream. iTunes, they, or at least Jobs said would stream. I didn't actually try that. The TV shows looked good. the TV shows, because they're 4x3, they get the full 480 lines, and I thought they looked quite good. Now, I've been playing them back on a big screen on my 30-inch.
You mean the full 360 lines, right?
No, that's 640x480.
It should all be 400. Okay.
It's 480p.
So they're 60, okay, so they're 640 wide.
Yeah, 640 wide, 480 tall, and it's progressive. And so, there's a lot of compression, too. So it's not merely how many lines, it's how compressed it is. And it's heavily compressed. But they look okay.
Are you watching them on an HDTV?
I'm watching them on the 30-inch LCD screen.
Yeah, that's a pretty big screen to scale that video up to.
Yeah, and so that's what I'm saying. I think that's challenging.
NTSC TV.
Yeah, I think they look fine on a standard TV. And they look fine on an enhanced TV, I think.
They look great in an iPod.
Well, of course, on a 2-inch screen, they look fantastic. Fantastic. But it is noticed. I'll tell you this, because I have lost Season 1, which was at the old 320x240, and I have lost Season 2, which is at the 640x40. It does look a lot better. Well, you'd expect it to. It's twice as big.
And then they're going to release Lost on Blu-ray.
And then I'll have to buy it all over again.
I don't know if it's going to be Blu-ray. Did you hear that... I guess maybe engineers that work for Warner Brothers are looking at making a disc that, since the Blu-ray and HD DVD are burnt at different layers, on being able to maybe make a disc that has both.
A dual format disc. Actually, triple format, right.
Put DVD on it as well.
Wouldn't that be great? But will anybody do it? I mean, we've talked about this before with the Dvorak. Didn't he say that there's some limitation? The studio's may not have the options of doing it both ways.
Because they're cutting private deals with production companies.
Right.
Movie houses.
So looking at this Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, it's a two-hour movie, 1.32 gigabytes.
It's quite
low. Yeah, it's MPEG-4, 128 kilobit bit rate, low complexity. I guess that's the audio encoding. Fairplay version 2. Total bit rate 1589 kilobits. That's pretty good. 1589 kilobits is a pretty high quality, isn't it?
It's not bad.
You're the video guru. You do more encoding than the rest of us.
Yeah, I don't know. Prager's catching up.
Are you?
It's interesting. I mean, like a typical hour and a half feature on Cinema Now would be about 2.3 gigabytes.
Oh, that's a lot bigger.
It's a lot bigger, and those scale okay on like a 1400, like a 16x12 notebook screen. Not great, but they do all right.
That's about what I'd say this is. Not great, but watchable.
Well, yeah, but it's certainly more watchable than a VHS. But you're also, what's the resolution on that 30-inch screen? It's something insane, like
2560.
2560 by 1600, yeah. So it's a 1080. It could do 1080p. It's a little, I'm looking at it. It's a little blurry. I'm watching it right now. It could be better.
It's also tough because, you have to literally compare it against a DVD of the same content at the same range being upscaled on the same monitor.
Right.
Because I've seen some people caught a little short when they go, "This video is crap," and you make them play a DVD scaled up to the same thing on their system.
And it's also crap.
That's not right.
Yeah, no, that's true. So, I'll tell you, though, I have seen HD, DVD, and Blu-rays, as I know Robert Herron has, on these big 1080p or larger monitors, and they look fantastic. I mean, they
larger than 1080p.
It's looking better than Blu-ray.
Is it? You like it better?
To be honest with you, either one of them should be equal in terms of the video they can deliver. However, the first few titles we've seen in Blu-ray, for the most part, was not using the transfers were not coming from the best quality
bad,
source.
Bad
material.
Transfers, right.
So if you're looking at something and you're seeing scratches and specks and dust and other things that have been encoded into the film in the transfer, it's kind of depressing. Because you really notice it on a 65-inch, 1080p screen. Neither one of them is really generating out true 1080p video. 1080i only out of the Toshiba boxes, and the 1080p that's coming out of the Sonys are essentially using from the Sonys. It's being done. It's basically being upscaled in the Sony box. So if you have a bad upscaling processor in your TV, the 1080p out of the Sony may look a little better than feeding the 1080i into it and upscaling it.
Right. Hey, look who just walked in. My realtor just walked in. George Crow, his former producer at Call for Help, is now making millions in real estate. Is that a chocolate, an LG chocolate you have in your hand there?
No, this is a Samsung.
Okay. I always thought you were doing better than you are. Oh, no, that's cool. It looks like the chocolate. Yeah.
He spray painted it.
He spray painted it chocolate colored. So,
talking of 1080p and Sony, did you see all the stuff that came out of Tokyo Game Show this week?
No, what happened?
Well, Microsoft announced that it's going to allow the Xbox 360 to put out true 1080p, which is something previously Sony claimed would be exclusive to the PlayStation 3. Uh-oh. And so that's another a bullet point knocked off. Sony said it was going to put HDMI on all the on both versions of the PlayStation 3.
Which the Xbox does not have.
Amazingly, they said, well, we made the decision in recent months because when we revealed the PlayStation 3 at E3, there weren't any HD TVs in the market with HDMI, yeah. But now there are, yeah. So we're going to put HDMI
yeah,
on.
Yeah, there are.
And it's
now,
like, yeah,
we suddenly
right,
discovered
whatever.
That. But they did say they're dropping the price in Japan down to just over $400, which is a
yep,
significant.
Not in the U.S.
Just in Japan?
Just in Japan.
Well hell, I'll fly to Japan, pick one up, and come back.
Well, it's not region free. You'll have to import games in Japanese.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll have to go back and get the games.
And learn Japanese.
Well, that's all right. I'll save $200.
We're going to need
you spend
a bigger
more than
visa.
That on the language tapes. But yeah, the guys at 1UP interviewed them and said, no, actually, it's only going to be in Japan, no price cut anywhere else.
Really?
And the Sony press conference was
how
described by Joystick as a train wreck.
Yeah, I believe that.
Which was really interesting. They said, you know, everybody wanted firm details on the software, firm details on the online capability, firm details on real launch plans, and all they got were more regurgitation of nuances of hardware. So that was a bit disappointing, apparently.
But that's something they've always been like, you know, it's just trying to argue why it's such a technically superior platform and no one should ever yeah. consider gaming anywhere else.
You know, I thought also very interesting was that Xbox 360 is going to have an HD DVD player for a mere $200 in time for Christmas. Now that's going to be a nice add-on.
Yes.
Which would you choose? Would you buy a PS3? Well, let's say the PS3 really was $400. Would you buy a PS3? Or would you buy an HD DVD player for your Xbox 360?
Oh, I just want the Wii.
I want a Wii, too. Mostly because I like to sing, like saying, Wii.
I don't know. I mean, the Wii's like, you know, a good night out at a serious restaurant.
Exactly. It's cheap. So, all right. Out of curiosity, I don't think, does anybody here have an Xbox 360 yet? Nobody's committed. You do?
No, I do. I have a 360.
So you've committed, but you'll get them all, probably.
No, I won't bother with PlayStation 3.
You won't? Why not? You don't like Zelda? What's wrong with you?
Zelda's on the Wii.
That's Nintendo.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I'm trying to sound cool. Please. Do me
no,
a favor.
I mean, the only game that's on the PS3 that I remotely care about is Metal Gear Solid, and that's not going to come out till the end of 2007, beginning of 2008, by which point it'll, you know, the PS3 should be substantially cheaper.
I know.
I've got my 360 now.
What about Final Fantasy? Don't you want to play? That's the one I was thinking of. Final Fantasy. Don't you want to play that?
I couldn't give a monkeys.
All right. Final Fantasy 25. You don't want to play that? All right.
I played the first 24 and a half.
Yeah, I have to say the Wii sounds intriguing. The I like my old Xbox. I suppose I would want to upgrade. And I think if you're going to buy an HD DVD. Seems like it'd be sensible to buy the Xbox 360 and HD DVD for not much.
Well,
more
they're
than
saying that if you buy the two together, the bundle will be cheaper. The HD DVD drive will work out at $100.
Yeah, but
rather than
also HD there will be less expensive HD DVD players
by then
debuting this.
You think
just
by Christmas
in time for the shopping season?
You think so by Christmas?
Yes.
You're going on the record predicting it.
Yeah, that's a good phrase for it.
Patrick Norton says there will be by Christmas.
I have been told by sources smarter and better informed than I that there should be next, you know, sort of there should be less expensive, at least pricing, if not units. And
blame smarter people. What, you know, come on.
Well, look, I'm the one who's saying it, so I'm going to get the email from hell.
Blame the smarter people. They said it.
Well, what's interesting is a talk I had recently. They said, look, the next generation of the HD DVD players are going to move away from the gigantic 40-pound Linux box pricey Linux box, and it's going to be more of a piece of consumer electronics equipment and less of a highly customized Linux machine. I'm sure it'll still be running Linux at some point.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Somebody debated me on that.
But the prototypes would be really more of a kludge, and now they can kind of put it all in LSI and
yeah,
that makes sense. So, Patrick, Tuesday on DLTV, we're going to show you how to fix your Windows.
Yes.
That's exciting. IDF is coming up Wednesday. Will Harris will have, I'm sure, reviews on bit-tech.net, right?
Mm-hmm. It'll be rolling news coverage up to the second.
Do we expect anything new? I mean, hasn't Intel blown their... I mean, how could they have any new things to say?
Well, they're going to talk about their actual plans for bringing out quad-core gaming processors for Christmas.
Oh, my God.
So they're going to have...
Quad-core gaming processors for Christmas?
Yep, they're going to be there. They're going to be...
Holy... What game will use a quad-core processor?
It's not about whether or not a game will use it. It's about having it before your neighbor does.
Yeah. It's about the fact that you can run four games simultaneously.
Ah, and then I get it. Now you need a quad SLI so that each one has its own video
card. They're also going to talk about, I think, what they're calling the era of terror, which is not like Afghanistan and Iraq. It's like terabytes and terror. Lots of different things. And there are rumors that they're going to be showing off the first working prototype of an 80-core processor.
Nice.
I wonder if I could drop that in. I wonder if that'll be pin compatible with my Mac Pro. I'd love to drop that.
I'm sure it will.
I'd love to drop that in.
How long have you had that Mac Pro, Leo?
A week. And I already have to rebuild the hard drive. I think I put too much crap on it and something's wrong.
So I must say I've done what a lot of people have done bunches of times. I've seen Patrick try it a couple of times. I know you've always been a Mac kind of person, but I finally owned my first Macintosh ever, which
You're kidding.
A Mac Pro, and I absolutely, absolutely love it. But my whole...
You bought a Mac Pro? Was your first Mac?
No, I'm not a Mac Pro. I'm a MacBook Pro.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, not even that, a MacBook.
Oh, so we have two new MacBook owners in the audience.
What I do want to say is that my intention isn't just to switch. My intention is just I want to be a Mac user and use it as a primary system right now, but I'm always going to have a PC.
Put Parallels on there. Windows runs great on it. I mean,
I'm keeping a halfway decent PC around because as soon as Vista ships, I mean, you can say anything you want, but I'm going to be using it.
Well, good news. You can run Vista RC1 right now on Parallels on your MacBook. Mm-hmm. It runs great.
That's true. And then I guess are they shipping Vista year? I guess
January. Well, you'll hear.
And it says they're putting it all out on DVD. They're, of course,
it's
business
an ISO.
Person wants to do. They're putting every single version on the same one so that you can get the cheapo version on a DVD. And if you want to get they've got a home premium, home business, and a business and an ultimate. Is what they're having from $199 to $399. So,
and if you decide to buy a MacBook, please, by all means, go to davidprager.com/Apple and buy it through there.
No. Save that for revision 3.
Prager's never this excited about hardware that doesn't involve, like, you know.
No, I think that's good. He's getting won over. Doesn't Kevin also use a MacBook Pro? I think revision 3 is becoming Mac-ish.
It's great for video, man.
So tell us about the party is Tuesday.
The party is Tuesday.
And what are you going to announce?
We are going to that's why you have to go to the party. And we're probably going to put up a webcam at the party.
Come on, give us a scoop.
We don't have it yet.
Give us a scoop.
Oh, man. This is what's so funny. Everyone's like, we're not supposed to say anything. And like, if I blow
seven
it,
new
like,
shows,
before,
three of them are daily.
Three daily shows. Good.
Did anyone say? Yeah.
No, Kevin and I already had a summit meeting, and we decided you're not going to do audio. I'm not going to do video.
Perfect. And we're announcing a new piece of hardware that streams 1080i HD content. No, I'm kidding.
For $12.
Yeah.
And a new Dig phone.
Seriously, though, I mean, pretty much it's all going to be surrounding like more of an establishment of like we've become a real company rather than, you know, just
and you've
hobbyists.
Got you do have some and, shows with some names that people will recognize that have not yet been visible in the video podcast world.
Sounds good to me.
But you will know their names and will be very happy to see them on camera.
Yes.
Can you talk about the return nobody's seen in 2.5 years?
The show no one's... Yeah, there's the show that no one's seen in 2.5 years.
What a fresh episode.
It's done.
The... Really?
It's fixed. It used to be broken, and we fixed it.
You fixed it. Okay.
There you go.
And,
but seriously,
and
all this
Lala
stuff will
be in any of these shows?
Lala will be at the party, for sure.
Really?
Will Lala be in any of these shows?
Lala's Canadian, isn't she?
Lala is... I know they do their...
I'm looking for a Canadian woman.
They're up there, eh?
Yeah.
So, but seriously, all this stuff is...
I'm looking for a woman that says a boot.
No, you're looking for Terrence and Philip.
Yes, that's what I'm
looking for. You're
looking
for a boot.
Everything will be announced on Tuesday night in San Francisco.
All right.
And everything will be seen to anyone who's got a halfway decent web connection on the following morning, the 27th.
I'll make sure to streak the webcam.
Nice.
Yeah, that'll really...
But again, everyone who's in San Francisco is invited.
Good. Everybody
and
in San Francisco.
And if you're not in San Francisco, put yourself in San Francisco.
And where is it? The Mighty Bar?
It's called Mighty. It's at 119 Utah Street in San Francisco.
It's Mighty.
At 7
Mighty,
PM.
Mighty. Just letting it all hang out.
And Leo will be there, and Patrick will be there, and...
Upcoming.com.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want people to RSVP before they show up?
That would be cool. Okay. If you just do a Google search, do upcoming.org.
.org, not .com. Okay, .org.
Yeah, and then type in revision 3 after that. You'll find it pretty quick.
All right. I'm going to wrap this up because David's got a bunch of Frankfurters to wrap up in bacon. And Patrick's got to quickly get his DLLs unregistered. And Will... has to. What do you have to do, Will? You've got something to do. You're going
to
be putting a new hard drive.
I have to go do some reporting.
Oh, some actual work.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys for being here. We will see you next Sunday. And if anybody's in Ontario on Thursday or Friday, come by at Podcast Expo. We'll see you down there. We'll be doing a twit from down there, actually. It'll be a special twit. I think we'll still do the Sunday twit next Sunday, but we'll do a special twit from Podcast Expo. Thanks, everybody. Another twit.
Are you ready?
Is in the can.
Yeah, the twit army. I don't know what the answer is. I really don't.
Let me introduce the table mates. John C. Dvorak. Kevin Rose. Patrick Norton. David Prager. Robert Heron. I got the twit army behind me. Microsoft poo-pooed it. They denied it, said no problem. It's been on your system. You're dead. It's a fool's paradise.
I'm quite excited I'm doing Cranky Geeks on Thursday.
Are you? That's great.
Yeah, I'm quite excited about that.
That'll be great.
Ending.
You've become part of the family.
Well, I think just...
No, too late. You are.
Anybody else that's British.
I'm sorry, you're part of the family. Sorry. You can't get out now.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
Next thing you'll be dating Lala. That's what I call doing the twit.
Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit.
All right.
Doing the twit.